Are you ready for new dimensions and countless possibilities today and for the future? It's an exciting new time, and the answers are out there. So join Mary Jane Popp as she explores the unique and unusual for a better life on Pop Talk in search of the truth. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
Yep, here I am. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. And yeah, welcome to hour two of Pop Talk, and got a good one. A little bit later on, Judy Norton's going to join us. If you remember the television series, The Waltons, and it's kind of interesting because people are seeing it for the first time. New generations are seeing. I was thumbing through some of the stuff on the internet the other day, and there it was. And then I was watching something on television. There was. It's still running, The Waltons. It was a time when people got together with families to watch television at that time. So Judy Norton, she played Mary Ellen on The Waltons. She's going to be with us later. But before we do that, where are we, with the technology in movies and television and, how do we even get our information that we believe in? How do we have feelings about the information that we're getting? I'm not sure it even exists anymore. But we're going to find out. Hang in there. It's Pop Talk. And you know we do talk about it all. Boy, is it a sign of the times. Now, let's be honest. Life can be complicated, and we can be drawn into situations that influence our personal lives. And I'm sure that influence came to Carrie Rickey as she delved into the life of Agnes Varda and her book called A Complicated Passion, The Life and Work of Agnes Varda. Now, I'll be honest with you. I didn't know who Agnes Varda was. Now, Carrie is an award-winning film critic, art critic, film historian. She was the film critic at the Philadelphia Inquirer for like 25 years and written for the New York Times, The Village Voice, Politico. I can go on and on and on, but she's got so much to be able to share with us. Carrie, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Pop Talk.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a pleasure.
So tell me who Agnes Varda is. I mean, I got some information, but I don't know her, and why is she important?
Well, she was a Belgian-born, French-raised photographer, filmmaker, artist. She is the female filmmaker with the longest career in cinema history, 65 years. And when you consider that Steven Spielberg is 78 and he's only made movies for 54 years, that's pretty. 65 years is pretty good.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, how did you? When did she pass?
She died in 2019 at the age of almost 91.
Oh wow!
She worked from age 19 to 3 days before she died at almost 91. And she never stopped. And there was a lot of obstacles for women directors. And she somehow surmounted them all.
Amazing.
To continue working for so long.
Did you ever meet her?
I met her three times. Twice for lunch at film festivals and once for a formal interview. And she was a pistol, as they say.
Oh, that's good. We need more of those pistols. We really do.
Yeah.
Why A Complicated Passion? Why was that book important?
Why the book? She has, people who are, movie geeks like I am, know who she is, and they love her movies. But I just thought that although she had many fans in America and although she worked in America, she is not as well known here, and it would be good to have a biography in English, not only because she was a great photographer and filmmaker and artist, but because she shows us how to never take no for an answer to take joy in working and to take joy in connecting with people and to take joy from just you know, living.
Gotcha.
And she has an incredible amount of empathy, and she and an inordinate amount of humor. And I thought that story was interesting to tell too. And what, you know, no matter whether you know the movies or not, she's just interesting. Also, Mary Jane, she knew everybody.
Huh.
She, I mean, Susan Sontag was her ally in the anti-war movement during the 60s. Simone de Beauvoir, the French philosopher, was her ally in the reproductive rights movement in France.
Mm-hmm.
She made a movie about Huey Newton called Black Panther in 1968, and she was friends with Huey Newton. She made Harrison Ford's first screen test. She discovered Gerard Depardieu. I mean, shall I go on?
Wow.
I can't.
That's all I can
everyone.
Say.
Is,
wow, that's
and
amazing.
And she befriended everyone from celebrities to, the gypsies who were, as people say, food insecure,
mm-hmm.
And why they gleaned gleaned food from fields.
Hmm.
And because they were hungry, and because it is stipulated as a rule in the Bible, and also in French law, and it's allowed, even though corporate agriculture doesn't really want to recognize it. But she made movies about things that no one else made movies about, and she was always ahead of her time.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you said she addressed things like sexism, abortion, labor exploitation, immigrant rights, race relations. Man, she was definitely ahead of her time.
And yes, and there are a lot of people who make documentaries who are telling you what to think. Varda had respect for the audience, and she was like a reporter. She laid out what was there, and she wanted you to do the work to make conclusion about what you thought.
How did she influence you?
Well, when I was 18 years old at the University of California, San Diego,
uh-huh.
I had a film class with a eccentric and wonderful film critic named Manny Farber, and he told us we were going to watch a film by, I misheard it, Angus Varda.
Oh, okay.
a filmmaker. And the movie started. The movie was named Cleo from 5 to 7. And the director was Agnes Varda.
Uh-huh.
And I realized, oh, my God, a woman director. Is there such a thing? And if there is, why haven't I ever heard of one? And, wow. And the movie was so different than the male-male buddy movies or whatever I was seeing in the early 1970s. Well, and movies like, really great movies like The Godfather.
Yeah.
But this was, there was a woman in it, and she wasn't only pretty or nagging her husband.
Yeah, gotcha.
she had a character.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was so stunned that, you know, it politicized me. And I enjoyed the movie a great deal.
Oh, that's good. You know, that helps. You're entertained in addition to the learning something. Yeah. But did she have issues of her own? I mean, she fought, obviously. She had to fight to be a director during her days.
I don't know if you know this, and I'm sure a lot of your audience doesn't know this. As early as 1896, when the first movies started being projected in Paris and America, there were women directors.
Really?
They were there at the beginning. And most of them were erased by film historians. They weren't, they weren't important, but they were hugely, they were excellent directors. Some were funny. A lot of them were making movies about women's issues, about women going to colleges, about women, wanting reproductive rights as early as 1916.
Wow.
These women, and their names are Alice Guy Blaché, Lois Weber, they are erased from film history. I didn't know about them until, I was 40.
Why do you think they were erased from history? Male dominance?
I have to guess because most of the film historians at the time were men.
Yeah.
And maybe they just didn't know, or I don't know. I would have to I have to think that that was part of it. But I have to also think that they were, when the studios happened,
yeah,
in the early 1920s, these, you know, studio bosses didn't want people who had their own studios, like Alice Guy Blanchet, who was the first woman with her own studio in 1910 in Fort Lee, New Jersey. Or Lois Weber, who had her own studio and made tons of money, was the most popular director at Universal Pictures in 1917. And there were more women working or releasing movies at Universal Pictures in 1917 than 2017.
Wow.
And that's kind of annoying. But they made their movies before the studios conglomerated. And the studios had more power than these independent directors had.
Mm-hmm.
And the studio directors got put down in history books or were written about and were not erased.
It was amazing that those women could do what they did because they couldn't even, at that time, own anything for the most part. They had to have the husbands, you know, it would be under the husband.
Correct.
You know,
I have to say that a lot of women directors had husbands who were also in the business, but you know, did other things. It's really, really interesting. But that's not about Agnes. Agnes Varda also was produced many of her own movies. She actually recognized that a lot of women had been written out of history,
mm-hmm.
and that wasn't going to happen to her. She bought back the movies that she made with other producers because she wanted to own them and she wanted to make the money off of them. And didn't want to share it.
Amazing.
With producers. She figured it out.
And for you, being a filmmaker and a director, what do you think about movies today? I kind of love the kind of movie that when you leave, you remember something. It makes a difference in your life. It somehow makes something inside of you feel something. And a lot of the movies today, I don't feel nothing when I leave.
Well, that's why the independent film movement in America is so important. And Varda was the person who made the first movie of the French New Wave, which very much influenced the independent cinema movement
mm-hmm.
in America in the 70s and 80s.
Okay.
And she basically said, do it yourself. Don't ask someone to help you. Figure it out. You know, figure out how to finance this, and you don't have to make a terribly expensive movie with a lot of sets. You can just go out and shoot outside and make movies about life.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because I don't know if you're familiar with Perry King. Perry was the original TV series Riptide, but he did Slaughterhouse-Five, tons of stuff, and his dream was to make a movie that he really felt that he had to do, something inside of him said he had to do. He finally accomplished that. I think it started in 2015, 16, 17, something like that. And the problem was to produce that movie, he had people came out of the woodwork. We'll give you the money to do the movie. However, there was a caveat. We want some sex scenes, we want some love scenes, some skin, that type of thing. And he said, no, that's not the movie I want to make. And he went ahead and financed the movie himself. It turned out to be a beautiful, it's called The Divide. And it was the kind of movie that when you left, first of all, you were crying.
I always like that.
Yeah. And the second is, I never forgot it. I never forgot some of the things that he said in that movie or felt in that movie. And I don't see much of that anymore. Do you?
Well, I have to say that from COVID to about 6 months ago, I was writing a book and copy getting in a book, and I wasn't seeing a lot of new movies. But I saw enough new movies to realize I wasn't going that much anymore because I wasn't very interested in Marvel movies. And although my younger daughter loves them, and she, she's sensible, but I don't get emotional about superheroes.
No. Well, all they do is blow up things, and you know. And so,
well, there was just too much explosion. I mean, I have to admit, I like Robert Downey Jr. in the Iron Man movies because he's a great actor.
Yeah,
and he makes things emotional. Mm-hmm. And if you have a really good actor, they can rope you in.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
But yes, I'm not seeing that now, and I'm not seeing it on streaming services either. I'm seeing really for the most part formula movies. The only thing I really have enjoyed on streaming is a comedy series called Hacks with Jean Smart.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
And a great series with Michael Douglas and I'm forgetting his name. It's called The Comiskey Method, and it was hilarious.
Oh, okay.
But this is both of them, are a couple of years old. And TV is not about, TV series are about cliffhangers and will they or won't they sleep together so they can string you along.
Yeah.
And it's about character. It's not about places or scenery or deep stuff.
Yeah, or something you can actually learn something from it.
I have to say, Varda made movies that were emotional.
Yeah, I love that. See, I do love that. Now, okay, which brings up another thing. Artificial intelligence, it don't got no emotion. So how is that going to fit into this whole thing with films and TV and all that?
I can't say. I don't have a crystal ball, but I read papers by college students who have used artificial intelligence to construct a paper where I asked one question and the AI machine they used didn't answer it. So that's how I knew they were using AI, and they finally confessed. And I said, I want what you think. I want you to think it through. I don't want a machine to think it through.
Good.
Think it through. And that's one of the reasons I don't like teaching anymore.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you a bit. A friend of mine has a young daughter, first year in college, and they were asked to give a synopsis of some kind of paper that they wanted to write. I don't remember what the subject matter was. And they said, when you have that synopsis done, then do AI and let it give you suggestions. I don't want a machine telling me suggestions on what I think or feel or want to do. That to me is not real. Yeah. What do you think? It's not real.
It's not. And I think that's why we like movies about real people.
Yeah.
That's why film biographies are wrote people in, because wow. He or she did that, and I was a real person.
Yeah.
This isn't fantasy.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I apologize to everyone who loves Marvel movies. I mean, they're fine.
It's
they're
fun dirty. To watch it once in a while, but to have a steady diet of it, too much. It's just too much.
That's how I feel.
What?
And
I still like to talk to people. I don't want to talk to an android at this point, I don't see these androids being like Data from Star Trek: The Next Generation. It's not there yet. Even that android wanted to be human, so it's like.
Well, that's the whole thing about angels and androids. They all want to be human.
There you
so
go.
Why do we want to be androids?
You had an encounter with Amazon. Did it frustrate you?
I was trying to explain to an AI chatbot that the package that they left on my doorstep when they were advised to put it through the mail slot was stolen. And it kept on kind of saying that wasn't anything he was programmed for. And it was a he.
Yeah.
And he kept on interrupting me and telling me my choices of what I could say.
Mm-hmm.
And I got totally frustrated. And I called an emergency line at Amazon and said, mm-hmm. please, a human, please.
Well, yeah. I do that all the time. It's like, you know, you hit the zero, you know, or keep saying representative. I want a human. Thank you very much, but I want a human.
I don't think my chatbot recognized the concept of human.
Oh, there you go. I think you're absolutely right.
He hadn't been programmed.
So what do you want people to take away from A Complicated Passion?
I want them to be to think about being open to the world and looking for stories everywhere, however large or small, and thinking about how a lot of Varda movies oppose something that an individual is doing with that person's place in a community. And her characters and stories really go from individual space to community space, and how we deal with both, and everyone deals with both, and how much better it is when you can strike up conversations with people who aren't like you, which I think is a really important message this election year.
Mm-hmm.
Because not all of us are in agreement, but we can be civil to each other, and you know, no matter who we vote for, we're all humans, I hope.
Well,
and
sometimes I wonder. Sometimes I do wonder.
We have the same needs, and we have the same. I think Varda was just an inherently generous and politically aware person who believed that everyone had a right, to food, to respect, to jobs,
and to thoughts.
The movies come from a different time, but she really influenced a lot of people to make movies, and not to make big extravaganzas, but just to make movies that mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And without preaching to us.
Absolutely. Do you have a website?
I do. It's carriericky.com, carriericky.com.
Okay.
And it has some of my writing on it, but it mostly has quotes about the book and promotion of the book. But, yes, and you can just search me. There's a lot of stuff.
Fantastic. Well, Carrie,
online.
It really has been a pleasure talking with you. I'd love to have you come back again sometime so we can continue. To be continued. How's that?
Well, thank you very much. And hi to Sacramento.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you just take good care.
I love Sacramento because Buster Keaton made movies there.
Oh, I love it. That's true. Do I watch Buster Keaton now? No. But, it's like, it was
those
fun.
Those movies are great. They're still funny.
That's it. They're funny. And it didn't take dirty words to make it funny. It was really something. It was a belly laugh. It was a real belly laugh. So, but anyway, Carrie, thank you so much. I hope you'll come back again because we've got so much more to talk about.
Okay. Thanks for so much.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Once again, Carrie Ricky, the name of the book, A Complicated Passion. And this lady, I got to look up some more information on Varda. She sounds fascinating. Anyway, stay with us. Remember the Waltons, the TV series, the classic, iconic TV series? Well, we've got one of the stars. Stay with us on Pop Talk. It's hot to the max in the summer, and your air conditioner gives up the ghost. Who are you going to call? ACP Mechanical, that's who. I did, and I can't believe what a great job they did in my home. It's cool and comfortable with a job well done. Hi, Mary Jane Pop here. Whether it's cooling or heating, Enrique and his ACP Mechanical team can install, repair, commercial or residential, no matter what HVAC system you have or want. and they've done it for over 20 years. Air conditioners, heat pumps, furnaces, thermostats, all quality and affordable solutions, and they're bonded and insured. I know you'll love their work. I do. Call ACP Mechanical, 916-704-8556. That's 916-704-8556 for all your comfort needs. That's ACP Mechanical, 916-704-8556, and expect an expert job well done and right the first time. I mean, how can you forget what that music was from? Yes, it was and still is a classic television series, one that actually brought families together to watch The Waltons. And, of course, we know her, our guest, as Mary Ellen in real life, Judy Norton. But Judy, she had been busy as ever with so many projects from Stargate, Inclusion Criteria, and so many more. From stage at the tender year of 7 years old to television, the big screen, add songstress and director too. We're going to find out what this multi-talented Judy Norton is up to these days. Hi, Judy. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've talked. But you know what? You didn't let the grass grow under your feet. I mean, you kept doing stuff.
Yeah, you know, I've always been sort of if a door closes, crawl through a window or something.
Yeah, whatever. They always say another door opens. No, you have to open it. That's the thing.
Yeah, sometimes you have to kick it in, and sometimes you have to grease the lock. Who knows?
You betcha. Now, what draws you most? Stage, TV, singing, film, or all of the above?
All of the above. There's things I love about each one of them, and I love being able to sort of mix it up because there's a different energy to each of those creative outlets, so I can find enjoyment in each one of them, whether I'm working as a performer or I'm working behind the scenes writing or directing. There's joy in all of it.
So what's most important to Judy Norton?
Ah, wow, that's a trick question. Not really, but I would say always having some sort of a goal that inspires me. I think that as long as we're continuing to pursue things that we enjoy and bring satisfaction to us, I get a lot of satisfaction out of creative endeavors that I'm sort of an artist at my core, so having an opportunity to entertain, to inspire, to help bring hope. And I think that being able to touch people, and what was wonderful about the Waltons was that we did, I think, bring a lot of hope to people and reflect their own lives. And I have found over the years more and more that the work that I do means more to me when people are somehow touched by it. They relate to it, even if it is just that they were able to forget their troubles for an evening and sit back and laugh and enjoy. So I think that means a lot to me.
We don't seem to have, and I want to get your read on this. The movies that we see today, whether it's made for television or the big screen, you know, it's the Marvel movies. It's the blow everything up and, you know, the crazy stuff. I want to walk out, you know, in tears or remember something very special from that movie that changes me, that touches me. And we don't see a whole lot of that anymore.
I think there's something for everyone. There just may not be the same degree of what some of us want. Clearly, there are people watching a lot of the things that are being made that may not appeal to me, but
I can't say it isn't within their right to enjoy that and want to watch that. I think that I can get enjoyment out of some of the big blockbusters and just enjoy a good romp. And I think some of them do have enough of a story at the core, even if it is good triumphing over evil.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that sense that we can, no matter how big the crisis seems to be, that the impending disaster, that the human spirit is such that if we really strive and we work together and that we can overcome anything. And I think sometimes, even in the darkest times, that is valuable and can serve. I mean, that goes back to the old Western,
yeah,
you know, with the good guys and the bad guys, the white hats, the black hats. So
yeah.
I think that in some ways we can still cheer that victory by the good guys. I have a harder time sometimes when the bad guys keep winning.
Yeah.
Or when there isn't a hero to root for.
Yeah,
When I watch something and I feel like I don't like any of the characters, that in the quest to perhaps show that everybody has their flaws, that often I feel like I'm presented with an anti-hero that I have a hard time caring about.
Yeah.
And unless they in some way ultimately seem to be on a path of redemption, then I have a hard time caring.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a hard time cheering if they're winning at the expense of other people.
Now,
I have more of a problem with that.
Gotcha. Well, now the pandemic was a pretty rough time too.
It was.
How did you get through it? I mean, you just didn't you do inclusion criteria in 2018, right?
Yeah, that was before the pandemic. I did a little short film called Space Limbo.
Okay.
That is really only available on my YouTube channel.
Okay.
But I was part of a writer's group, and when everything was shut down, we sort of continued our group virtually, and someone at one of the weekly sessions said, I challenge someone to write something we can do during the pandemic. And I thought, well, why not? And so I came up with a concept that I thought would work. And ultimately, we were at a point in the pandemic where we could shoot a small, you know, little film and keep everybody safe. And the protocols were in place to be able to do filming. And we followed them. And we spent a couple days filming this short little just silly fun space adventure.
Cool.
So I did get that done. And then the main thing I did during the pandemic, when everything was shut down, I started watching seminars and workshops and things, and ultimately was inspired to experiment with a YouTube channel. And so I started a YouTube channel about the Waltons, behind the scenes of the Waltons, just talking about the series and different episodes and the actors and the characters. And it's now been over 4 years that I have been doing that. It's been continuing to grow. And it initially it was an experiment, and then I've come to realize from the viewers and the comments that people make how valuable it's been to them, and particularly during the pandemic, it became a community that people could share with me and with fellow supporters and viewers and lovers of the Waltons about the show and what it meant and it represented going through tough times.
So what do they ask you most about the Waltons?
Initially, a lot of my questions have been about the cast. Did we really get along? Were we really like a family, which we are? We're still very close. We still see each other. We get together because we love each other, not just because it's work.
Uh-huh.
Because we're not working together now. So we are still in each other's lives, and we share each other's life events, be they wonderful ones, or as we've been losing parents and whatever, bad ones. So I get asked about that. And then what's my favorite episode?
Well, what was it? You got to tell me now.
Well, it's hard with over 225 episodes.
Wow.
To pick a single
yeah.
favorite. There were ones, and I had not watched the show really for years, because when it first went off the air, I couldn't get whatever channel it went into syndication on. So for years, I couldn't watch it. And then finally, it came on a channel, but I wasn't necessarily home when it was on, so then I was trying to tape them. So I was trying to collect all these tapes of the episodes, but then I never went back and watched them. So in a way, this has reconnected me with this series, because in order to talk about the episodes or answer questions, someone will say, oh, in episode blah, blah, what was blah, blah? And I'm like, that was 40, 50 years ago. Do I remember? No. Well, did Mary Ellen do it? Like, I don't know, did I?
Yeah, probably did, but I don't know.
What did you think of that thing? I'm like, I don't remember what I was thinking when I was filming that.
Yeah.
Probably, what time am I going to get out of here so I can try and meet my friend for dinner?
There you go.
I don't know.
That's right.
But in going back and rewatching the episodes, I am constantly watching an episode that maybe I saw once, maybe twice. Sometimes I'm not even sure I ever saw it, because if I wasn't home on a Thursday night when it went on the air, I didn't see it.
Yeah.
And then if I didn't catch it in the rerun, so there are episodes I don't even really remember, especially if I didn't have much to do in it.
Aww.
And so because of that, I keep watching episodes and thinking, oh, that's a great episode. I love that episode. So my favorites sort of have evolved. I still think... since I will answer the question, one of my top ones is the Easter story from the first season. It was a two-part one that finished the first season when Olivia, when our mother got polio.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a really sweet episode. Everybody had something to do. Everybody had a little storyline and how it connected us to each other and to our mother and what she was going through. So I loved that because it was really the whole family. And it always brings a tear to my eye at the end when she comes out of sleep because Elizabeth is calling, Mama, Mama, and without thinking, without really being awake, she gets out of bed and starts walking. After having tried for ages and failing, and then, you know, she wasn't thinking about it, and she just got up because her baby needed her.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I find myself being so moved by episodes. So that one, one of my favorites has always been the firestorm about, we refer to it as the book burning.
Uh-huh.
It was John Ritter had joined the series as Reverend Fordwick, and there's this just incredibly powerful scene at the end where there's local people who John Boy wants to write about and share in his little paper about what's going on with Hitler and Mein Kampf, and he wants to print parts of it, and the community's in an uproar because how can you be printing this German propaganda? And John Boy's feeling is, well, he's dangerous and people need to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I agree with it, but because it's my job to let you know what's happening out there. And so some members of the local community have decided they're going to have their own book burning, and they're going to burn a bunch of German books.
Oh, boy.
And then right at the end, John Boy spots something in the fire and he pulls it out, and there's a local woman in the community who has German heritage, but she doesn't want anyone to know because of everything that's happening in Germany, and she doesn't want people to, treat her differently or be afraid of her or start attacking her. But when he pulls it out and he recognizes what it is, even though it's in German, and he says, oh, I wish someone spoke German, and she steps forward and she starts reading in German, and then she translates into English, and it's the Bible.
Oh,
So, you know, it's like, oh, okay, so you're saying these are all dangerous books because they're German. So it's just a very powerful moment about fear.
Yeah. Sounds a little familiar, doesn't it?
Operating on fear. Yeah, just a little. And that's what I find. I mean, the show first aired in 1972, and here we are.
Doing it again.
Later, and these stories are still so relevant
yes.
to today.
Yep.
And that's what I find in interacting with people on the channel. I mean, if people want to check it out, it's just, you can look me up on YouTube, Judy Norton Channel, Behind the Scenes of the Waltons. And I think more and more, if people search something about the Waltons, I hear people say, I was searching such and such for this episode or this aspect, and your channel came up.
Okay. I love it. That's great. Are you still singing?
Yeah. I am. I recorded, that was something else I did during COVID, because we couldn't get together and do a lot of things, but I had forever been wanting to do a Christmas CD.
Ah.
So during COVID, I thought, well, I can certainly put this together during COVID. 90% of it was me spending time choosing the songs and learning the songs and learning the arrangements and making those choices, and then just really just getting in the recording studio was the only thing I did that it wasn't just from my home, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So,
so that I released a couple of years ago, and that's available streaming and through my website.
Okay, what's it called?
It's called Home for Christmas.
Say that again?
Home for Christmas.
Oh, Home for Christmas. Oh, I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Nice. Are you, now, I know you're a singer. Did you write songs yeah. too?
I never have. I have helped write some lyrics occasionally for some shows I was working on, some mm-hmm. theater productions, but I have never written music. I play a little bit of guitar, and I've been trying to learn piano for years, but I don't spend enough time practicing, so yeah. I'm sort of nowhere with it.
I know, I understand. Believe me, I understand. So, what makes Judy Norton happy?
I just think being able to engage in activities that I enjoy, and I'm very fortunate to be able to do that, whether it is creating projects with friends and fellow artists, or just being able to engage in hobbies. I've gotten in the last few years involved. I've been riding horses forever, but I've gotten into some different aspects of riding, and I've begun to challenge myself a bit by going to some horse shows.
And, oh.
So that's kind of a nice therapeutic outlet for me.
Good.
Away from the normal, you know, the other things I do. So.
Do you have horses?
I have a horse, yeah.
A horse. That's good. That's enough. One's all you
yeah,
need.
Yeah.
Do you have any other furry critters?
I do not. No furry critters. No other pets at this point. And so.
Still family? I mean, that's important to you too, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And none of my family lives really close by. So I don't always see them as much as I'd like to, but they're still definitely in part of my life, as is my TV family.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah, so you have a son.
My husband and I, yeah.
Yeah. And does he...
My husband and I love doing some traveling and stuff here and there. We'll go take trips and do things. And,
nice.
Yeah, my son is actually in Japan right now.
No kidding.
Back this weekend. He's going on, you know, he's always wanted to go to Japan, so he and his girlfriend went to Japan, and I'm looking forward to him being back, because he does all my editing.
He does all your what?
editing.
Editing.
Yeah,
so. Built-in editor, huh? I like that.
Well, I hire him to do my editing because that's what he does.
So. Oh, that's great. No, that's great. So, newest project. What are you, you do some all these other kinds of things. You've got the YouTube thing. You've got all that going. Any new projects, movie, television, anything that you're going to be doing?
Nothing specific at the moment. I also physically moved during COVID out of LA, so I'm a little further out of sort of that circle.
Yeah.
So I'm just finding more and more that things have to matter to me or appeal to me, because there's a lot involved with projects of any kind. So if it's not something that really speaks to me, then I'm just getting pickier about what I'm willing to do.
No, I don't blame you. You're entitled to it. Do you have any? Do you watch anything on TV that you like now? I mean, that's going on now.
My husband and I watch a lot of. We watch a lot of British shows.
Really?
Some new, some old. But we love sort of clever British murder mysteries. Whether it's sort of the offshoots of Agatha Christie or we don't like anything too dark and gruesome, but we like them when they're clever and that the lead characters are interesting and people we care about.
Interesting.
That aren't too soap opera-ish, in a corny way. This is getting me.
I understand what you say.
But there's some really sweet shows when we're talking about family things. There's a show called All Creatures Great and Small.
Uh-huh.
It's set in a small little village in England just before the First World War.
Oh.
Or Second World War, I guess. It's in between the First and Second World War. And it's just it's like a veterinary clinic, and all the different patients they have because they deal with small and large animals. So they have to go out and help if there's a problem with a cow or the sheep or.
That sounds like fun. That sounds like a good one.
It's really sweet. Yeah.
Going back to the series, The Waltons. I've had the opportunity to talk to Michael Learned and Richard Thomas, and I think all of them have the same feeling. It's family. Remained family, and it will always be family, no matter what.
Absolutely, yeah. We've talked before about, about writing and stuff, because of being all the involvement I've had with the L. Ron Hubbard Golden Age of Fiction and his and all of the fiction works that Mr. Hubbard wrote, and which like the Waltons have really endured, and so it takes me back to what I thought really made our show work, which was wonderful stories that people could relate to and cared about, and that seems to be a universal theme. So when you were asking about me and potential projects, the material makes such a difference. If I get something sent to me, it's like, oh, hey, I'm looking to maybe do this, and I read it, and it doesn't speak to me, and I think that it's just not a great story or not well told, then it's hard for me to get excited about it.
Sure.
And I think that's what those two key things in my life had in common is, that the Waltons, we had a lot of wonderful writers, and Earl Hamner, who created the show, was a wonderful writer, and, he came up through the same era as L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah.
They were writing fiction at the same time, whereas L. Ron Hubbard went down the route, actually not just sci-fi, because he wrote in so many genres.
Well, he lived most of those stories.
As did Earl Hamner. So see, we have two people basing their stories on aspects of their life and their travels and their experiences.
Now, you did a lot of radio plays at the L. Ron Hubbard Theater in Hollywood, too, didn't you?
I did. It was always such fun, and I always enjoyed reading the new story that we were going to be working on and getting to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they were, you know, everything from, and that was in the day when you didn't even have television right away. So you were listening to the radio, or you were reading books or short stories. That's where we got our adventure from. And so those key things just are ingrained in me, I guess, from the time I started getting involved in creative activities.
Well, you know, when you have something that speaks to you, you start living it. It becomes part of you.
Yes.
It's amazing. Do you have a philosophy of life? What's your philosophy?
I believe in optimism and hope. I feel like there's always an answer, and that things can always get better, that life can improve, and as, I guess, dark as it might seem, that, you know, you never give up hope, that you just keep believing that you can make things better, and that, you know, I believe life can get better, and even if I don't like things that are happening, I feel like giving up is never an answer.
Good.
So just
keep
moving forward, and I trust in people. I believe people are good. I love that. There's a country song, I think it's called I Believe Most People Are Good, and I think that's true, that I've met so many wonderful people and so many nice people. I just had an experience today. And this just speaks to character. Somebody that had bought my CD, and then for some reason there was a glitch in my website, in the sort of cash out, whatever, you know, in the payment page.
Yeah.
There was a problem. And so she sent me a message on, like, my Facebook or something like that and said, you know, the money that I spent for this, I got the CD, but then they refunded my money. And it's like, she said, I think there's a fake account. Anyway, we started digging into it, and it was just some glitch in the payment thing. And she had got the CD. It was from me. I did personally sign it, but the money had been refunded to her. And she took the trouble to track me down and figure out how she could make sure that I got that payment.
Aww.
I mean, you know, it was like $20. I wouldn't have even known. I wouldn't have even noticed.
Amazing.
But that it mattered to her. And I thought that was so sweet and such a positive sign about people.
Yeah, there are good people.
Someone would go to that trouble to do that, and probably figuring $20 wouldn't matter to me.
Yeah.
And it might matter to her, but that she wanted to make it right. So when I hear stories like that, it just, my faith in my fellow man just raises another notch, because I think that that's how most people are.
Well, there's a few.
You hear too much about the people who aren't.
No, Judy, there are a few a-holes out there, but that's okay.
There are,
you know, they're far outnumbered by good people.
I believe that too, and I think that we have to focus on the good people.
You betcha.
And not give power to the a-holes by giving them attention.
There you go.
That's kind of my theory. It's like, hey, you know, you focus on the positive, and that's what you'll get. You know, that's what comes to you is what you have your attention on.
You bet.
If you're busy looking for trouble, you'll find trouble.
Now we know about your YouTube Judy Norton channel. Do you have a website?
I do. It's judynorton.com.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah, that's easy, and that's where you can find, you know, my CDs if you want hard copies, which I personally sign.
That's
cool. You can order those there. Or I don't update it enough. I'm really bad about that because my YouTube takes so much time, and I do interact with everybody on the YouTube channel.
How fun.
I don't as much on my Facebook page, but I use my Facebook page primarily to let people know what's happening on my YouTube channel.
I know. Well, Judy, it was such a pleasure having you on the show. I love talking with you. I'd love to have you back again.
Thank you. It's always such fun.
And you just take good care. Keep up the good work and the good attitude. You know,
if everybody
just be nice to someone in every day. Do something nice for someone every day.
Absolutely.
It'll make a difference.
Pay it forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You take good care. We'll talk again.
Thank you.
And stay well.
Okay. All the best. Bye.
Judy Norton. You can go to judynorton.com or the YouTube channel for the Waltons is Judy Norton Channel. In the meantime, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, you dare to dream. Talk with you next time right here on Pop Talk.